spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our special program today, Never Ask What Country, was written by Morton Wishengrad. It is presented with the assistance of the George Meany Foundation of the Herbert H. Lehman Institute in observance of the 90th anniversary of the birth of the late William Green.
Gentlemen, you're looking as bad as I feel. What terrible news do you bring?
The Jewish Labor Committee has received a telegram, Mr. President. Mr. Green has it.
Please read it, Mr. Green.
It's from Paris. It's signed by Raphael Abramovich. He says, There is a list of 1,100 well-known leaders of the anti-Nazi, anti-fascist, and anti-communist movements. Orders are to shoot them on sight. Help us, or we shall die.
And I say they shall not die. Get me the State Department. I want to speak to Mr. Hull.
Thank you, Mr. President.
These 1,100, who are they?
Trade union leaders, writers, painters, professors, musicians.
All of them your people, Mr. Dubinsky?
Of course all my people, Mr. President. But if you mean all Jews, no. The Jewish Labor Committee doesn't believe in quotas.
It's like this, Mr. President. We never ask of an unfortunate, what country do you come from? What is your religion? We say to him, you suffer, that's enough. We shall make you well.
Very well said, Mr. Green.
Oh, I didn't say it. I'm not a word man. I was quoting Louis Pasteur.
Never ask what country. Say you suffer, that's enough. I want to remember that.
The year was 1940, and the fall of Paris had sent David Dubinsky of the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union and me, William Green, president of the American Federation of Labor, to the White House. But I am more than 50 years ahead of myself. That call at the White House was the end of this story. The beginning is the front porch of a miner's house in Coshocton, Ohio. The year is 1884. It is Sunday. My father, Hugh Green, is sharpening his miner's pick. My mother, Jane Green, is churning and rocking a cradle with her foot in rhythm to the churn. I appear on the front porch, a little self-conscious. I have a Bible in my hand. My father has promised me a $5 gold piece if I will read the Bible aloud to him from cover to cover.
We left off at Micah. Shall I give my firstborn for my transgressions, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He hath showed thee...
Hold on. Not so fast, boy. What does it mean, shall I give my firstborn, that's you, for the sin of my soul? What sin? What have I done?
I'll tell you what. You're taking him out of school. You're sending him down into the mines.
Is that a sin? The boy's 15. In Wales, my father sent me down when I was 10. We need Billy's wages. Do you want us to starve instead?
Maybe that's the sin, being poor.
I wanted Billy to be a preacher. I wanted to see him standing in the pulpit preaching to the congregation.
If Billy's got something to say, he can say it at the congregations of the miners' union.
So So in the 15th year of my life, I was ordained a miner instead of a preacher. I went down into the pit, and the sin was there, the dark sin of poor souls. It is such an advantage not to be poor. Sometimes you can forget about money. I must tell you an important thing. I honor the memory of my father. Not once in my life did I bear him a grudge for sending me deep under the graves of the world to bring up the coal which gives light and warmth to my fellow men.
Count this too, Mama.
Thank you, Billy. But somehow I never can get the feeling that company scrip is the same as money.
I earned it. It pays the rent on the house.
A company house?
The doctor accepts it.
Because he's a company doctor.
Well, the company store gives you flour and beans for it.
But it's not money. We don't own it. It owns us. I can't bear to think of it. A boy like you, working in Morgan Run number 3, robbed of the shine and sun, half your life under the ground, risking your life for $1.50 a day, and when you get your pay, half of what they put in the envelope is this paper scrip, not real money.
Here you are, Billy Green. 1 keg of blasting powder. And that will cost you exactly $2.75. Ain't you going to cuss me out?
What for, Mr. Simmons?
It's the custom in Coshocton for a coal miner, when he collects his first pay, to cuss out the manager of the company store. Now, I'm charging you $2.75 for a keg of powder that you can buy for $1.10 at the cash store.
Do you keep the difference, Mr. Simmons?
Fat chance. It goes to the company. Billy Green, I like you. Boy, you work in a dangerous place.
All coal mining is dangerous work.
But Morgan number 3 is worse than any. It's a mine with a bad top. Now, if you was my boy, I wouldn't allow it. Son, I know you want to help your folks, but it ain't worth the risk. You can read and you can write. I'll pay you $1.50 a day. Work here.
I never seriously considered it. There's a satisfaction in coal mining that people outside, above ground, can't understand. No one to order you around. To be on your own, to work with your body, to feel your muscles grow hard, to experience danger, to share that danger with friends, to know you can depend on them, and to know they can depend on you. It's a man's feeling. And worth more than $1.50 a day. This was the sound of my boyhood.
Caven! Caven! 6 men! Caught in section 12!
How many times in my boyhood I helped carry home the broken bodies of my friends. And because I knew how to read and write, how many times in my boyhood was I called upon to record a familiar epilogue to a coal mining tragedy?
Mrs. Bailey, I'm awfully sorry, but I've got to ask you these questions.
Do your job, Billy. Do it good.
How many children do you have?
5 children, older than this one. 6 in all.
Any insurance?
Where do you live, Billy Green? In Buckingham Palace? Coal miners don't get insurance. Not in Coshocton. Not this year, not last year. Why? Is that on your paper? Why coal miners aren't insured?
No, ma'am.
Then you go back and tell them. Hannah Bailey says the right question is just as important as the right answer.
I wanted to be a preacher, but hard events made my church a coal mine. My first congregation, the Coshocton local of the Miners Union.
Talk and talk and talk, and this committee has heard it all. Well, Brother Kendall believes that we've talked too much.